Good morning.
Ooh.
I think it's still morning anyway.
Yes.
We'll do our best to keep it within our allotted time. In fact, I'll make sure we keep it within our allotted time. I won't keep it within our scheduled time, because if we did that, we'd be done already. It does seem that part of the morning has already geared itself towards our panel, which is focused on restructuring. I don't want to take a lot of time to introduce people and do the preliminaries. Everyone's bio is in the back of the book, but I do want to at least acknowledge our panelists. You have Evan Cohen immediately to my left from DCMP, Gunnar Gehrig from Ernst & Young, Jan Erik Gross from HSH, and Axel Seatman from Navis Corporate Finance. I think you've got an interesting group here. And as I said, we can pick up a little bit on the themes that we've heard this morning. The title of our presentation is Restructuring as a Business and Investment Opportunity. It's kind of an odd title, if you will. If you listen carefully to what the bankers said, to quote Michael Parker, we've reached a perfect storm as we transition from 2015 to 2016. Henriette Brett-Peterson said dry bulk is going to get worse, not better. We've heard from the immediately preceding panel that it's a buyer's market in shipping debt. And we also heard others this morning allude to subjects that will be talked about later, namely the capital markets and the inactivity in those markets, and perhaps a declining interest in private equity for shipping. That strikes me that maybe the best business opportunity in restructuring might be what those of us up here do. So you might want to think about that. But to kind of pick up from where we where the last panel ended, and the subject of debt and a position of banks, I want to jump right away to Jan Erik. You are a restructuring officer at a bank, a little bit different from the people who were in the first panel this morning. How do you look at the market now? What constraints do you feel? And by the way, are you in the good bank or the bad bank, or is that distinction gone now at HSH?
Well, I'm in charge of the entire distressed loan book of HSH, so there's not a clear cut between good bank and bad bank. So I think it's not a secret that predominantly my portfolio comprises of shipping assets. And my present view is, and also coming back to the topic of our panel, is that yes, we are in a crisis, whether it's a perfect storm or whether it's a cyclical downswing, well, that's up to you. You're much more in shipping and you perfectly have your own views on this. But I think it's fair to say that we are in a crisis, we are in a deep crisis, and that I can confirm that offers a lot of opportunities. I'm convinced of this.
Opportunities for whom?
Opportunities for everyone who has, I would say, long breath, and who has a view on the industry. And if you look at the opportunities presently, well, you can buy, as a matter of course, that's something you can always do. You can buy a single asset, a single vessel. You can buy an entire fleet, whether as a loan or whether as ships themselves, or you can buy also corporates. And I see in my portfolio a number of companies also where I'm afraid that liquidity won't last long. And so my perspective is that we have here also in 2016 a landslide in terms of how the industry will look like. And so that's an opportunity for a consolidation, for a concentration, and that's also a perfect opportunity for investors, whether these are strategic investors or finance investors, to jump in. But what you need is certainly some breath, i.e. liquidity, to feed what you buy throughout the crisis.
I don't mean to pick on you, but as the sole banker on the panel, I am curious as to whether in your role as a restructuring advisor, if you are looking to restructure credits or you're looking to offload credits.
Well, I have to do the math. It's not, I don't have a songbook that tells me, okay, on page 3 do this, on page 5 do that. It's very straightforward. I'm committed and obliged to better the best recovery for the institution I'm working for. And so I have to carefully plan and analyze what kind of transaction offers the best return. And so if I have a chance to sell, let's say, at an entire fleet where I also have the chance to participate in future upsides, that might be better than taking at the lowest point of the market if I sell the entire fleet to the market. And moreover, as Atlas is one of the larger players in shipping, I believe that in the present fragile market, it's only sufficient to have 5 or 10 vessels of a specific sector to really drive down the prices. So I would finally end up in depressing the market I'm selling to. And that is something I have to very carefully plan.
Lawrence, may I just jump in here? As the subject is restructuring, also an opportunity, I think one thing that needs to be very carefully considered by those companies that are undergoing or will undergo restructuring, I think the importance is to be proactive about it, because you're not the only one that is about to face a restructuring, especially in dry bulk or in container vessel segment these days. And the bankers that you will be meeting do have one problem. There's just so many situations that simultaneously are still in distress. And your big chance is, you know, to try to come up with a game plan that is an opportunity for both you and the bank. So as to ease Jan Erik's problem to do the math, if you come up with a rational plan that works out and that addresses the concerns of the banks as well as your own problem, that I think is the part which creates the opportunity. Don't want to say that there's blue skies and it will be a great life after the restructuring, but restructuring is fighting for survival, and so far take the opportunity to be proactive about it.
I do agree to this, so I'm open for proposals, yeah.
I think that's an excellent point, and I do think that ultimately our attention is going to be turned towards the process of restructuring as our Q&A up here continues. But I'd like to continue to set the stage a bit as to what the fundamental aspects of the problem are. And Gunnar, I know we had some correspondence, including your thoughts about the pressures on the bank, perhaps the various banks and the regulatory pressures and the increasing pressure on liquidity generally, and what impact that might have on the restructuring difficulties. So would you be interested in commenting on that?
Sure, thank you, Larry. So indeed, what we clearly see in the market is that the pressure on the shipping companies is definitely increasing, especially with regards to their liquidity situation. So as we heard this morning from Michael Parker, there was an approach by the banks to kick the can down the road, and he clearly pointed out there is no can anymore, and that is of course a difficult situation now for the shipping companies, as they cannot rely on the banks to be in a position to further provide standstills and all of what we have seen in the last years. So I'm fully with my panel participants that you need to have a clear plan as a shipping company how to overcome the crisis, and you also need to elaborate the measures in order to have a to a unique business case, which is not like a standard non-operating ship owner case, which would be difficult to promote to the banks and private equity scene. You need to have a clear structure. What we have often seen in shipping is that structures are not clear, but they are more tax-driven or have more a family-owned angle. Of course, you need to have processes which are fully aligned to the needs of your customers in order to be a good player in the market. And then on top of that, you need to be transparent. And apparently that was something which shipping was not very famous for in the past. So there are many game changers which you need to address in such a plan in order to proactively approach finances.
Thank you. Evan, you've made the transition from a restructuring officer at a bank to someone who's now in a ship advisory and restructuring advisory capacity. How would you like to add to what you've just heard?
Well, based on some of the earlier comments this morning, I'm glad I'm not a restructuring officer any longer, but I'm still working in that field. There was an interesting comment on the last panel. The question was, should you be concerned about hurting your clients' feelings if they're on a sell list? And I think we're at the new stage where everybody knows what the reality is. So no, the client's feelings, the ship owner's feelings won't be hurt if they're on a sell list. And the ship owner should not be embarrassed, not that they ever were, or ashamed. This is about, I'll buy back my own debt. What kind of discount are you going to give me? Especially the good ship owners who know they're going to stay in business. So take the discount from the bank yourself. If you're going to put more money on the table, we're talking about a two-year principal holiday. So there is barely enough to cover OPEX, maybe a bit of interest. So guys, we're going to keep stay in business, but the fundamental thesis is principal's not going to be there for a while. The bank on the other side has to decide, okay, is this a good owner who's going to take care of the asset? So I think all cards are on the table now. The discussion is survival.
That is the crux of the problem, isn't it, right now? I mean, in certain industries, and it's not just dry bulk, you could look at the offshore support industry too. The rates are not there or barely there perhaps to cover operating expenditures, and they may not be there to cover operating expenditures. These debts are these vessels that secure these debts are highly leveraged. The banks don't want to become ship owners, at least they say they don't want to become ship owners. They want a plan. I've heard several people now say that people, the borrowers, et cetera, have to be proactive. I mean, some of this distills down to platitudes. That's all well and good. But what happens at this this conflict between the bank not wanting to take on an equity risk, but the borrower being, or at least the borrower sponsor, being concerned about putting any more equity into the platform if the bank is just going to grab the ship 6 months later when a reset covenant busts. What do you do? What do you advise either side in that circumstance? What would you tell a bank? What would you tell a borrower? That one's up for grabs, gentlemen.
There's no longer covenants. I mean, LTV and VMC, this was designed to be a warning signal. Well, we've been warned, so that's finished. It's about, is the ship running well? Is it covering OPEX? And what are you going to do with the excess cash? And in this case, you don't have, I mean, we have a new client who has small bulkers that aren't covering OPEX. So are they going to continue to burn cash? No, they're going to stop the ships. And the vessel debt is above the vessel value. So now it's a negotiation. How much pain is going to take place, and how are you going to share it with the bank?
Gunnar, you advise banks. What would you tell a bank in that circumstance?
Well, we advise banks, but more often we advise shipping companies. And first of all, from a shipping company perspective, again, I think it's very important to be well prepared, and to be well prepared also with respect to the new contact persons you will have within the banks. As we heard earlier, relationship banking is gone, and the new contact persons, being workout bankers, often have very general questions regarding your business model, especially if it's a niche business model. So everything what was built up in the previous 20 years could be just vanished, and you need to rebuild trust in that kind of situation. And that's why you need to be well prepared and to clearly point out what are the advantages of your business model. Is there anything you could add to your business model with regard to consolidation, for example? We have not seen that much consolidation in shipping yet. There were some cases clearly in the container segment, especially in the last 2 years. But regarding dry bulk, for example, there were not too many cases. If you look at the last 10 years, it was more the other way around. And there's certainly potential for consolidation to build larger units with leaner headquarter structures and with the chance to optimize the network, and also with the chance to have a professional team who is able to fulfill all these strong requirements from capital markets, from banks in these tough situations. And so that's why it's very important to be well prepared for those talks and not just to go into them and assume that the long-term relationship your company has built over years could help you in that situation.
Axel, please, go ahead.
Yeah, our recommendation to clients in a restructuring situation is always regard it as an investment or as a disinvestment. If you regard it as investment, you know, you want to negotiate terms that, you know, are in line with your assumptions about the market and that you really have a realistic chance of making that a profitable investment. If you come to the conclusion you cannot achieve any terms and your view on the market is so negative, regard it as a chance to disinvest. And you might want to find out that if you cooperate on a disinvestment, you can offload some of the debt of the group's liabilities and in so far ease your situation also by a disinvestment. But at the end of the day, it all boils down to make it as profitable for yourself as you can. And your bankers that you'll meet, they will be quite realistic. I mean, they've been doing this now for 7 years, so there is no illusion about, you know, what the ship owner basically ideas are. And it's just needs to work out for both sides, and you need to know which way you want to go. So either invest. If you come up with fresh money, then it should be well spent. You don't want to lose that 6 months later. And if you feel that's not what you can achieve, then you might take the disinvest option and get the best deal for you as well.
So, Axel, if your client that you're advising has decided this is an investment...
Maybe I add something from the other side of the table. So I hear from my fellow panelists, it all starts with a plan, and I fully agree with this. That is, I think, pretty straightforward. We need a plan. To make it simple, if the bank, and I only speak for our house, if I, as banker, has to inject the shortfall of OPEX, that's an absolute no-go. I wouldn't do this, yeah? So I think that is clearly an owner's function of injecting capital. So I think it's very much a matter of survival. If you look into the bulk sector, there one needs to have a real tough plan how to survive. I'm certainly ready to make concessions, but the survival has to, or and the contribution liquidity has to come clearly from the owner's side, not from the bank side.
I'd say that, and I'm sure Axel and Gunnar would agree, that that's largely true, but of course part of liquidity is also giving perhaps amortization relief, and that can only come from the bank. But Gunnar or Axel, either of you can take this question. If you've got, to follow up on what you said, Axel, you've got a client that's decided that they've got a substantial investment in, let's say, dry bulk, because it's an easy segment to pick on at the moment, substantial investment in dry bulk, but they've either been convinced by the analysts or they've convinced themselves that there really will be a turnaround, and that turnaround is going to be in 2018, just to throw a number out there. And they're prepared to come up with some liquidity to make sure that their cash burn doesn't go below zero between now and 2018, but they've got to ask their bank for, you know, for relief. I mean, what are your asks? What would you tell your client to be asking from the bank? And then the next question is, again, I don't want to put put Jan Erik on the spot, but then the question becomes, which of these do you think are within the realm of something you can give? You want to try that one, Axel?
The reality is, you first of all need to watch carefully which bank is sitting on the other side, because some of the banks tend to behave differently than others. So there is no standard answer, you know, this is the terms you should ask straight away. I mean, you first need to analyze who's on the other side, and you need to figure out what the agenda and the capabilities are. Some banks are completely unwilling to finance OPEX, for example. And Eric just pointed out, there might be other banks that say, well, look, let's have a look at it, depending on how the overall restructuring deal it looks like. I mean, I must say, if your view is that the market will pick up in 2018, you should as well consider, you know, to keep your powder dry and start investing in buy other people's ships at the end of 2017. That might be one, it depends, of course, on your financial capabilities. But we've seen all types of structures. You know, we've seen people providing super senior loans to their own shipping companies, so which ranked ahead of the bank. We've seen the mezzanine type of structures where your capital is put somewhere in the middle. We've seen people buying their ships for cash from the banks. And so far, there is no standard answer. You need to look at, you know, what's the specific situation. What's the employment situation? Very important. And what are the capabilities of the bank on the other side?
Yeah, Gunnar? Adding to this, I think what is important for me is what is my assessment of the company? So is it a consolidator? Is it a survivor? Is it a company that won't survive? Yeah, I think that's an important driver of the concessions I'm ready to make. And then it's also clearly a more detailed analysis. So how is the OPEX in comparison to other market participants? Is it a tough player? Do they have also the money and the means and the management to grow, to consolidate, take over others? Or is it something where I'm not convinced of and where I rather pull sooner the plug than later? And then I would, next step would consider whom would I be giving the vessels I'm collecting from this company. So in order to create larger units that are more, that have more chances to survive the crisis and the next future.
Evan, do you have a reaction to that? If the banker maybe is getting closer to that point where it decides to pull the plug, what would your advice to them be?
I think Jan Erik raised a good point. It's the ability of a company, of the client. So can they survive? Are they running a decent shop? And can they, and the other is the desire. They may be able to do it. They may not want to put in more capital. So someone raised the point of putting it in at the end of 2017. One question that comes to my mind, though, everybody is more open than I ever remember to the idea of consolidation and putting players together. But if you take the dry bulk space, all that means is burning more cash longer. So it's I'm not. So people are now willing to do the consolidation. I don't know if it makes sense. And on my side, if I was advising a bank, I would say you can. Don't have to worry about placing the owner. You can take over the asset. If the current owner is unable to maintain it correctly, take it over and find a decent price. There's no reason to be a super distressed seller. And if you're on the owner side, I would welcome the change change in relationship managers to structuring managers. It buys you time. Between the introductions and the clear presentation of models, you get another 3 months out of it. And until June, when the banks have to really do the quarterly review, there's not a whole lot of pressure, but 6 months isn't going to do you any good in this market. You need 18 months to do something.
If 18 months, if that's enough.
If that's enough.
Right, and that's one of the questions.
I mean, may I disagree to a certain extent, as I would not point out that consolidation just means to burn more cash longer. As from what we see in the market and from our clients is that consolidation could very much make a lot of sense. And from other shipping segments, you could really see that new structures are able to be leaner and to have a more professional approach to the requirements of modern shipping. Shipping was always very capital intensive, but with the investments coming up in the age of digitalization, it's even more difficult for very small ship owners to fulfill all these requirements, to fulfill reporting requirements and so on. And also regarding the network, it may often make sense to do consolidation. So of course it's not a one size fits all solution, but I'm convinced that there is a lot of potential in consolidation, also in dry bulk, and that has not happened to a larger scale so far.
We should ask some of the larger dry bulk players in the audience if they're happy with the size of their fleet right now.
Yeah, but consolidation is also something that is important to me, also coming from Germany and seeing the segment of or the ship managers and their sizes, and looking then, for example, in the container sector on the other side of the table, it looks totally different. Yeah, so the liner companies are shrinking, and the tramp sector is totally fragmented. Mm-hmm. So it's very clear that they do not have any negotiating power at all, and I think that is important to me. And applies also more or less to the bulk sector, that consolidation is also important to gain bargaining power.
No, but I have to also agree with Gunnar. There's a class of owner where you talk about it's a dozen or less ships, where then the overhead costs start to really eat into you. The owners in this room are loath to lay off people because they're good people, you know them, and they're running ships, so you're not moving down the size of the staff so quickly. So there is an admin component to running a smaller company that starts to become a burden.
But especially the negotiation power. In these days, the main problem of dry bulk owners is apparently that they have long-term charter contracts, and these charter contracts running for 5 to 10 years, and if that's the case, and they were often concluded at times which were some 7 to 10 years past, then you really need to renegotiate those charter rates in order to get them somewhere close to market rates, and you have no chance to do this if you are a small owner. It's still very, very difficult to do that as a large owner, but of course your negotiation power is very different, and not only in that instance, but also regarding bunker supply and all of those areas make a difference in negotiating.
I fear that our conversation is getting almost as fragmented as the market, so I'm going to try to bring it to a central theme I want to explore for a little bit, and I think, Axel, you've had some observations on this. What are the possible cultural differences in approaching a restructuring? And by cultural, I don't mean Greek versus Norwegian. What I posit, and what I've heard others talk about, are the differences amongst the owners between, say, the traditional ship owner, the one who may only own 10 or 12, although may own more bulk. And then there's the private equity sponsored ship owner. And then there's the public company that maybe still has access to capital. Do these three different kinds of entities, do they behave differently in the restructuring process? Let me start with you, Axel, on that.
I find the, well, that's what we call the cultural component quite important. I mean, first of all, if you're a medium-sized, privately-owned shipping business, you've got, you know, other sources of capital, which is predominantly your own. So you're not a public market, you're not listed under the SEC. You've got a lot more requirements, and you might basically, if you have a long-term view on shipping, you might also want to carefully manage your reputation as a shipping company to vis-a-vis the banking community. And in so far, what we call the cultural component is, do you regard a restructuring as a fight, you know, where you just try to win? Where in today's market, especially with the very difficult cash flow situations in, for example, in dry bulk, you know, there might be no, you know, you don't win against your banker. And then so far, what we distinguish a little bit is between a U.S. approach, you know, where sometimes you have the impression it's all about, you know, two cowboys, you know, trying to pull out the revolver and shooting first. And that might not be lead to a big success. And in so far, also cultural, let me add one thing that I regard as very important is, I mean, it's all about human beings, you know. We're talking about the lenders, the banks, but, I mean, rest assured, you know, these are individuals that come with their personal agendas. They're worried about their careers, and that part of a restructuring is very, very important that, you know, you also meet the personal agenda of the people you're talking to. And in so far, there's a multitude of ways how you come across a restructuring. The biggest is, you know, do you want to basically strike a deal, regard it as an opportunity, as we started with the discussion, or do you regard it as a fight where you want to win? I would suggest try to turn this into an opportunity to get the best economic deal and you know, make yourself aware what is an achievement that is realistic about a restructuring. And then thereafter, basically see how to best achieve that.
Jan Erik, do you get different approaches from different types of owners and their proposals to you regarding restructuring?
Well, the cultural issues, I clearly see different differences in the culture. Well, actually, they are not that important to me, I have to admit. It's more important to look at things that are, for example, the jurisdiction of where do I enforce a vessel or where do I make a deal? Is it a stable jurisdiction or is it in which country? Is it what law applies? These are more important questions to me. So I would rather, I clearly see differences, but I would rather neglect this.
I guess I probably got us off on the wrong foot when I used the term cultural, because that's not really what I'm driving at. What I'm driving at is the nature of the company that's opposite the table from you. Is it somebody who is, their family has been in a business for five generations, they want to pass the business down, they have a much different calculus, perhaps, than a private equity sponsored company whose, it's all numbers. I know I'm overstating the case, but it's all numbers to them, and if they're going to have to put up additional equity, they're going to have to calculate a return on that additional equity, or the public company that just says, oh, maybe I'll have to dilute my shareholders, but I'll do an at-the-market offering.
Yeah, fair point. Well, if I compare shipping with other industries, and I'm not only for shipping responsible, I'm responsible for the entire distressed portfolio of the bank. So that is corporates, that is aviation, all other asset classes. I have to admit that the structure of what I see in shipping is quite often has the profile and the characteristics of small to medium-sized enterprises, because these are family-owned companies. They are not comparable to other industry that are more mature, like automotive or other industry. That is also one of the reasons why I'm strongly supporting a consolidation process. not saying that a small or medium-sized company cannot survive. It clearly can survive, but it has to clearly know whom to fight with. Yeah. So if it's if you're in a niche market and you know this niche market and you occupy this niche market, you can have fantastic returns. If you, as a small company that might have some also in terms of planning, in terms of accounting, some weaknesses, it's very difficult to withstand a highly professional liner company. So that is, I think, there I clearly see some force towards a more consolidated, more professional industry.
Evan, you want to take a crack at that one about the different kind of owners and their different approaches to
it's
restructuring?
So as a restructuring officer, I needed to work with the owners, and now in my own practice, I need to work with the owners. So their mindset, there's a different mindset. So you have, first you have a different time horizon. If you take the traditional ship owner, he's looking at this as, how am I going to get past this tough headache period, because I'm going to stay in business for the next generation. If you speak to the private equity investors, some of them we're hearing about are already, well, that's not worked out well, I'm moving to the next industry. So they have a different time horizon on how they want to deal with the issues. They have a different constituency. You have, if you're dealing with a public company, they have to worry about a whole other different set of issues. Even if with the same good faith trying to find a solution, they need to worry about, okay, what can I disclose and not disclose? What do I have to tell everybody? On the restructuring side, you have to worry about, okay, the cost if they get involved in a Chapter 11, are we going to do a pre-pack or not? So it's a different framework you have to look at. At the end, it's about the experience of the people on the other side of the table. So there you're having a discussion about the assets. When are they going to generate cash? When are they going to repay the debts? No, but all different, come from different places.
Thank you. Gunnar, let me just flip that question for you. Sammy David in the last panel said the distressed investors that buy debt from people like Jan-Erik are more creative. Now, I'm just going to take him at his word for that. But it may mean there are more tools in their toolboxes, you know, not with, no, with fewer regulatory constraints. Who would you, if you're advising an owner in restructuring, would you rather be opposite a bank or would you rather be opposite a distressed debt fund, and why?
Well, I believe, first of all, a shipping company should do everything to maintain their long-term approach with ship financing banks, and I would rather see the turn toward to other investors as a second step. As you say, they might be more creative, but the question, of course, is for shipping companies, is that being creative to the full benefit of the ship owners, or is it more for the benefit of others? And of course, in such a situation, well, you can be creative, but you need to state that also, well, you can be destroyed in such a situation. And so I would not be so clear-cut to say always turn to the more creative guys of the scene, but very often it makes sense to find a consensual solution with a good business case with the financiers which are already on board. So it's not always good to switch the team in such a situation. It's could also be difficult and dangerous.
I like the idea of dealing with the guys who already have the money on the table. So it's a different tone of conversation.
Yeah. From my point of view, you know, the career of a loan is the following. I mean, you try to find a deal with the existing lender, and if that works well, I mean, you know, fine. If it doesn't work well, your lender might consider to sell the loan. In which case, basically, then being the subject of the disposal, you might want to try to preempt the situation. And so far, that of course, you know, you could try to team up with one of the buyers, And for sure, I would not recommend to wait for anybody just having bought the loan, because you don't know whether a friendly party or a hostile party has bought the loan. So the recommendation is, if you smell basically that the loan disposal is an option for the bank, you know, try to be proactive about that as well. And if you have an interest, to hold on to the asset, try to be a buyer teaming up with one of the financial sponsors.
Thank you. I've been very unfair in the questions I've been asking, because I currently represent a private ship owner in a negotiation, a private equity sponsored ship owner, and a public company ship owner, and so I was just trying to get some helpful insights. So I've been very selfish. We're virtually out of time, but since I've monopolized the questioning, I do want to open it briefly to questions out there, if there are any. Boy, we must have covered all the ground. Thank you very much.